You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. What happens when you're the parent of a child who has special needs and your view of how you want your child to be educated clashes with the view of the school district? Melody Arabu is a mother who's been fighting that battle with the Walled Lake Consolidated School District. Now, if her name sounds familiar, it's because we spoke with her here on Stateside when she was named Michigan's Teacher of the Year for 2014-2015. Today, we speak with her as a mom. Melody Arabu, welcome back to Stateside.
Thank you for having me.
Your twin sons, Ashton and Adam, had some developmental and speech challenges, both at a preschool classroom for children with special needs. Why was that?
Yes. So we started noticing their delays at around 1.5 when they weren't walking. And so we enrolled them for services through early on. And then that led to special education preschool because they were able to, while going to school, get physical therapy, occupational therapy, speech, and other services built in.
But then when it came time to go to kindergarten, you wanted to have the boys placed into a general education classroom in their neighborhood school, which is Keith Elementary. Why was that important to you, Melody?
Well, I mean, that was always our plan for them. So we thought that the preschool program would be a good way for them to, you know, get some extra support and, you know, try to catch them up as much as possible. But our intention was always for them to, you know, be part of their home community and go to school where their sister goes to school.
And then the Walled Lake District said, well, no, we think the boys would do better in a school with specialized support for children with cognitive disabilities. And that school was about a 20-minute drive from Keith. How did you feel about that decision?
Yeah, you know, it was about a 20-minute drive, and then we kind of estimated probably about 40 minutes by bus, which, you know, is definitely something we wanted to consider because that makes a long day for the kids. But really, you know, we did a lot of research and found that most data shows that inclusion is what works best for kids, and inclusion in their homeschool is proven to be the most effective because our goals for them in the future is for them to be active members of our community. And so these are the kids that they will grow up with, that they'll probably work with in the future, that they'll run into at the grocery store, that they'll be part of with school events and even sporting events.
Now, you came to an agreement with the district that Adam and Ashton would have, we'll call it a trial period, in a general education classroom at Keith. How did things go?
Well, we actually were pleased with the way things were going. We didn't really know what to expect because their communication is their biggest barrier, but they were socializing, they were making friends, they were making progress toward their IEP goals. It was a very positive experience from our perspective for the boys, and so we were happy.
And but yet, 8 weeks into that, the district decided no, they were going to They wanted to move your boys to that special education classroom, that self-contained classroom at Meadowbrook Elementary. And how did that change then the discussion between you and the district?
Well, I mean, it's definitely something that we needed to learn more about. So we needed to make sure we knew our rights. We needed to make sure we understood the dispute resolution process. It was definitely brand new for us. And we, you know, reached out to some other parents that we knew were in similar situations. We really started to work together. We reached out to some advocates. We started consulting with attorneys. We just really wanted to understand what our rights were and then also what our kids' rights were so that they made sure to get the right education.
And then here in January, as you're dealing with all of this, you really were hit with just an unbelievable tragedy as Ashton passed away from encephalitis after getting the flu. I remember reading about that, and I knew we had talked with you on this program. And I tell you, our hearts all went out to you, and I hope that you were feeling the good thoughts of people from all over as we heard that news.
Thank you. Yeah, everybody was just amazing and so supportive.
And yet, and that did not deter you from your fight to keep Adam at Keith Elementary. And in doing so, you decided to file a complaint with the Michigan Department of Education. What was the complaint about, Melody, and why did you feel that was necessary?
Well, we knew that the state complaint process was free for both parties, so we felt that that was a better route to go than due process. It's less adversarial, you know, it's kind of giving the details and facts to the Michigan Department of Education, and someone from the Office of Special Education will, you know, investigate, and they have this whole process. So we felt that would be a good option. And so the three things that were really outlined were the dispute over placement and making sure that the free and appropriate public education was in the least restrictive environment. The second one was about the trial contracts. When we had signed them in the summer, we did not realize that they were not common practice and that there were some questions to the legalities of that. And then the third thing was an arbitration agreement that the district wanted us to sign to bring in a third party to try to resolve it.
And before the state completed its investigation based on that complaint of Waldeck Consolidated Schools, the district filed a due process complaint that stopped the state investigation from moving forward. And then after a two-week-long hearing in July, the administrative law judge just ruled in favor of the district. That ruling came September 2nd. And we'll be talking shortly with an attorney from the Michigan Protection and Advocacy Services for a legal view of that. But for your family, for your boy, what does this mean for Adam?
You know, this is like the next stage of the process. We really were depending on the state to make a decision in this, and we felt that it was going in one direction, and then that got kind of turned around, and we ended up in due process, which is costly and adversarial and very taxing, and it was not our choice to do that, but we did. And now we're realizing that different people see things differently, even at a state level. So what the state found is different from what the law judge found. And so we're really kind of left in this space of inconsistency, and that's a little bit frustrating. So we're looking into some other avenues for Adam, but we still so strongly believe in inclusion. We so strongly believe that he would benefit tremendously from being at his home school and being able to watch and learn from his peers and be able to hear good language models, because that's his biggest barrier. And you know what? He's part of our community. He had a great kindergarten year. After his brother passed away, the kids and the families and the teachers just, you know, took such good care of him. And this is his home. He's got best friends. He's going to play soccer with his friends on a team. And he has the ability to learn and grow here. And so that's what we're going to keep focusing on and find the best way to do that.
Melody, I'm sure there are people who would say that the staff who work with special needs students know what it takes for that student to succeed and what the best environment is. How do you think school districts should balance those recommendations of the special education teachers and staff with what parents want for their child?
Right, and I think that makes this case unique in the sense that I am a teacher and I have been a teacher for 15 years. I've had students every year in my class who are not at third grade level. I mean, I've had kids who come in at kindergarten level for reading, or even kids who can read at a high school level. So our district is very strong in differentiation and training the teachers to work with kids of all levels and all needs. And so I think the separation between special education and general education is probably at the root of the issue. I know that's something that Lieutenant Governor Calley and the Special Education Task Force that I participated in are trying to move toward, that this is just education for all, and all kids fit onto a continuum of need, and we provide teachers with the right resources and training to meet those needs, and it doesn't have to just be special ed teachers working with special ed kids.
And what would you say to other parents of children who have special needs listening to our conversation right now and wondering how to advocate for their children?
I think it's just never giving up. You know, in our case, we're getting different answers from different people. And so I think it just shows how broken the system is. And I'm not ready to give up in any way, shape, or form yet. And I'm not only advocating for Adam, but I'm advocating for the other families I've connected with across the state. And I think just all across Michigan, we can do a better job of serving kids with special needs and making sure that their civil rights are intact and that they get the same opportunities that all other kids get.
Melody Arabu, thank you so much for sharing your story with us today on Stateside.
Thank you again.
And Melody joined us via Skype. And now we turn to Mark McWilliams, an attorney with the Michigan Protection and Advocacy Service. It's an independent nonprofit that advocates for the rights of people with disabilities. Mark, as we heard Melody describe, here we have parents of a child with disabilities. They want their child to be in a gen ed classroom, experiencing everything and everyone that entails. And the district says, no, we think your child would do better in a classroom with a teacher specifically there to support children with special needs. Just what is the district's legal responsibility toward that child?
The district is responsible to provide special education and support, services and supports, to try to help a child get into school and to try to get in to general education and to learn and succeed just like everyone else as much as possible. That's the original premise of both the federal and the state special education laws.
And then
So when we see this kind of situation where they're truly at loggerheads, who has the trump card here?
Well, it's really challenging for parents to be able to voice any kind of disagreement with what schools decide their child should be getting. There are a number of different ways that you can resolve disagreements. There are a number of informal ways. You can try to negotiate through the IEP process. You can go to mediation. There is a process called IEP facilitation. But if you can't solve the problem that way, the formal responses that you have really are either to file an administrative complaint with the state if you think that the school is not following the law in some way, or you have the option of requesting a due process hearing. This is an interesting situation because because in this case, the parent, I think, decided to file an administrative complaint, and the district then responded by requesting a due process hearing instead.
Right. And what is that all about? What is a due process hearing and a due process claim?
Well, under federal and state special education law, if there's a disagreement and the parent and the district can't work it out, either party has the right to request a due process hearing, which is a hearing before an administrative law judge from the state, where you essentially present your case and then the administrative law judge decides. It's really designed for parents to be able to voice disagreement. It's not really designed for districts to come in and use it as an opportunity to try to stop parents from getting what they're after for their kid.
Which is what apparently has happened in the case of for Melody Arabu and her family, because when the district filed its due process complaint, that stopped the state investigation from moving forward. And then there was a 2-week-long hearing in July. And then on September 2nd, the administrative law judge rules in favor of the district. So does that slam the door shut for the family?
No. There is a right to appeal a due process hearing decision to either federal or state court. Let me say something, though, about the due process hearing, in case you're thinking it's a relatively informal affair. It really is not. It's a full-blown legal proceeding in most cases. There are lawyers involved in most cases. If a parent requested a due process hearing or is involved in a due process hearing, the district will almost always have an attorney representing them. The attorney, of course, has a responsibility to zealously represent their client, who is the school district. And so unless a parent has counsel, it's very, very difficult for a parent to participate and have their voice heard in that process.
Difficult and, dare I say, expensive?
And very expensive. That is if you can find an attorney who will do the cases. Our agency does very few due process hearings because we have a very small number of attorneys and we have a lot of other work we have to do in the state. There are very few now, very few private attorneys in Michigan who will do the cases. So if you can find an attorney to represent you as a parent, that's one thing. And if you can, it's going to cost you a lot of money. My view is that the process, from the parent's point of view, is fundamentally broken. It's also expensive for districts. Now, districts have insurance in many cases that will pay for their costs in these hearings, but it's still very expensive.
I'm talking with Mark McWilliams, who's an attorney with Michigan Protection and Advocacy Service, as we talk about where the rights stand when a parent feels that their child with learning disabilities should be in a general education classroom, and the district says, no, we think the child should be in a classroom with a teacher specifically there to support children who have special needs. There have been some changes, Mark, made to the dispute resolution process after recommendations from the Special Education Reform Task Force, which was headed up by Lieutenant Governor Callie. What can you tell us about these changes and why they were made and why they were needed?
Sure. The Lieutenant Governor's Task Force started to look at dispute resolution and made a number of recommendations, including increasing the use of mediation, trying to strengthen the complaint process. We had seen that the Department of Education had started to make progress, in our view, in improving the complaint process and making it more accountable so that the school districts could be held responsible for following the laws. And recently, there have been some slowing of those efforts to make reforms, and so we're concerned about that. We would, of course, like to see the reforms go forward and see the state be able to hold districts accountable for their responsibilities.
So it doesn't come to the point of having to go through this due process claim.
Right. For anybody who's been through a due process hearing, either a lawyer or a parent or a school person, it's really not a pleasant situation. And if we can figure out a way to do something better, something that is child oriented, that focuses on getting children in school, making sure that they're learning alongside their non-disabled peers, and making progress toward doing what every other kid in school wants to do, and that is to graduate and be successful as an adult.
So this case that we've explored, talking with Melody Arabu and now kind of talking with you, well, what do you think it brings to the large discussion we should be having in this state about parent participation and the rights of students with special needs?
Well, I think that it brings, first of all, the idea that students with disabilities are students first, and that you look at their needs in many ways the same way you would look at the needs of any other student. When students with disabilities are struggling, it's a bellwether of how students in general can be doing. And how we treat students with disabilities is a good bellwether of how you treat all our students. So, we have expectations of special education that somehow there's some kind of magic solution that you're going to get in the special education setting, when what you're looking at really is you're looking at providing the kind of individual look at a student and individual supports that sometimes are not that complicated, to really help the student be part of the community and part of the school. And I think that with good dispute resolution, recognizing that conflict is really a natural part of this field because the stakes are high. People care very much about their students, and teachers are deeply committed to what they do. The conflict is something that's almost inevitable. And once you recognize that and recognize a humane and meaningful way of making sure that parents have a real say in that and have an incentive to work together on behalf of students, that's when we do our best.
Mark McWilliams is with the Michigan Protection and Advocacy Service. Mark, thank you so much for talking with us today on Stateside.
You're welcome.